everyone, and welcome to a brand new live episode of The Cinephiles. I am John Rocha, one half of The Cinephiles, and I'm sure my partner Steve Morris will be coming in momentarily to join me to have this fun conversation on the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know, we're on the precipice of Spider-Man Brand New Day coming out. We're currently in the middle of a number of things happening and being announced. You've got Doomsday coming up later on this year. We've got Daredevil Born Again Season 2 really kicking into high gear and everything going on there. We got so much going on in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And Steve and I are about to, or we recorded part one earlier this week of Deadpool. So Deadpool, we are going to be diving into Deadpool. Had a lot of fun talking about part one. It's such a fun movie. And although that movie doesn't 100% qualify for what we're talking about today, we are going to let you know where we place Deadpool in our overall list. So basically, this idea came about from conversations that Steve and I had about the Marvel movies and where we would place the Marvel movies. Because he was like, what about these middling Marvel movies? Like, where do we place those middling Marvel movies? Do they have some value? Do they not have some value? Could lead to a fun discussion. And I was like, yeah, that sounds great to me. I love the idea of us discussing these Marvel movies and breaking them down and kind of clarifying where we think certain Marvel movies land when it comes to great Marvel movies, good Marvel movies, middling Marvel movies, and ugly Marvel movies. Essentially, I was using the good, the bad, and the ugly and just added some categories and moved some stuff around. And so that's kind of what we're looking at today. And we're going to break this down and talk about it. We're going to focus more on the middling Marvel movies, but we will talk about what movies we think qualify for the great category when it comes to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and what movies qualify for the good quality. So there's going to be separating of these Marvel movies. I think there's 47 of them, if I'm correct on that. And we're gonna talk about them and break them down and then figure out where we place them and have a fun conversation about where they go and what they're all about and why they belong in the categories they belong in, and all these things like that. So that's the situation that we're dealing with here today. And so we will be talking about that. And of course, Steve Morris will be along in just a couple of minutes. I'm sure he's got some family stuff that's popped up here for a second. So please be patient. But we got stuff to get into that's going to be a lot of fun. And we want to hear from you all. What are the great movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? What movies are the middling movies in the Cinematic Universe? What movies are the good ones, rather? Then what movies are the middling ones? And what movies do you think are absolutely the ugly ones, the bad ones, that are just no good? That you got to let us know in the comments there in the chat. And those of you who are watching later on or listening to us later on, if you want to come back and leave a comment on our YouTube video, or you can leave a comment on our Patreon or on our Twitter, letting us know what your lists are for this particular situation. And, you know, we're in phase six right now, right? With what do we got coming on here? Phase six is happening right now. And that is Fantastic Four First Steps, which happened. We have Spider-Man Brand New Day coming at the end of July, which I hope you all enjoyed that new trailer. Then we've got Doomsday coming in December of this year, later on December of this year. And then December of 2027 is when we're supposed to get Secret Wars. Now, there's been a lot of conversations about whether they're going to move Doomsday, stop the idea of Doomsday and make it Doomsday on one week and Doom 3 the next week. They're even exploring the possibility of dropping it a week before Doom 3 comes out. We'll see if that actually happens or not. It'll be interesting to see if they stick to that time or not, because that is super important for how they're looking at all of this and the box office take and the reception to it all. But so far, the buzz has been pretty positive. People have really enjoyed the initial trailers that came out in December into January. People have liked the stuff they're hearing behind the scenes. Kevin Feige said that he is on set daily for these shoots. Yeah, there's been a little bit of drama. I reported on a little bit of drama behind the scenes between two of the cast members. But look, you're going to get that many actors on a set, there's bound to be some kind of issues between some of the actors, especially if they don't know each other, haven't worked together before, they want to stand out. You know, it's just a different animal. So there's bound to be some friction at times with the egos and everything involved in the professional desire to look good and want to do a good work. So that's all there in the making of those movies. So we will see what the end result is later on. And certainly Marvel right now is a little bit wobbly. You know, I know people loved Wonder Man, which was really fantastic earlier this year, but Daredevil Born Again just had the most highly rated episode of its run happen this past week. But Michael Vogel and I, in our review on the Geek Buddies, we weren't necessarily that high on the episode. We're kind of wondering why we're not feeling so jazzed as everyone else is about the about Daredevil Born Again, because there were some issues with, in our opinion, some issues with some of the storylines, some of the acting here and things of that nature, and how some things are happening conveniently in certain ways, and it's not as gritty as we would like it to be. I think we both kind of fell into that feeling that it isn't like The Penguin on HBO Max. We wish it was more like The Penguin on HBO Max. And also, you know, there's this idea of where they're going next with the X-Men, with Sadie Sink and all that that's been released there, with Jeff on the hot mic, what he's been reporting, what he's been talking about as well. And so is this where they're going fully with the X-Men? Is the rumors of the five movies that Sadie Sink has been signed on to, is that where they're going next with this whole mutant saga? Is it going to be multiple X-Men movies, or the X-Men appearing in multiple movies as they get rolled out there in phase 6 and 7? So there's a lot to look forward to when you look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because in the future right now, they've got Black Panther 3 that they haven't put a date out for that one yet. Armor Wars, Blade is apparently still dancing around in there, a sequel for Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. And as I mentioned, that X-Men film, and they just signed Joanna Kahlo and Lee Sung-jin to come on and write that one to work with Jake Schreier, because they had worked together on Thunderbolt. So they are the latest writers to come aboard. I think the third set of writers to come aboard for the X-Men movie. So there's a lot of things still in flux, but I think we're heading towards a December where this movie, Doomsday, has to be an absolute banger, or they're just not. It's not going to be a success. And I think that's, or it's going to dent the Marvel brand even more. So, but everything inside me tells me we're lining up to have a great 2026 for Marvel movies. It feels like Spider-Man Brand New Day is going to be fantastic. It feels like Doomsday is going to be great. So there's just that energy that you feel behind the Marvel Universe that it is going to happen. So we will see in the end what it all leads to, if it's going to go down and explore the mutant stuff. Certainly Spider-Man Brand New Day, in that trailer, it seemed like they were exploring Peter's possible mutation into Man Spider. The Hulk becoming Savage Hulk, him talking about, you know, messing with the mutations and all of that. So, and then what is Jean's role if Sadie Sink is playing Jean Grey, which I think is 99.9% sure. What is her role in all of this? And are we going to see any other X-Men pop up in this Spider-Man film? Are they saving certain things? Everything gets spoiled nowadays, but, and certainly I'm guilty of sometimes doing that with on my shows, but I wonder if there's still a couple of hidden secrets that they have for that movie and what's going to happen with that movie. So we'll see. We'll see overall, you know. So there's a lot to talk about when it comes to the Marvel Universe. A lot of films to look at when you look at the Marvel Universe. Certainly Phase 1 had there we go. All of those. So many Marvel Universes. It's kind of crazy to think about how many films have been in the Marvel Universe. So we're going to talk about them all here on the show. Not extensively, but certainly the ones that are middling, we're going to spend a little more time on. But we're also going to talk about which ones we consider to be the great ones, the good ones, the ugly ones, and then, as I said, the middling ones. But I can't do it alone. Let's bring him into the channel, my co-host here on the Cinephiles, and that is Steve Morris. Hey, Steve, what's going on, man?
Well, there has been a lot of things going on today that led to a bit of a delay. I'm very, very sorry. I've got my sister in town, my son. We were doing family activities. I lost track of time, ran in here, couldn't get anything to work correctly, couldn't get my mic up, couldn't select the right camera, couldn't do any of that stuff. But I'm here now, and I'm ready to talk some MCU.
Okay, you are here. Yes. I was just telling people for the first 9 minutes of this, going on and on about how we're going to be exploring the MCU movies and kind of separating them from the great ones to the good ones to the middling ones to the ugly ones. But we're really focusing on the middling ones, and how this was an idea that you had kind of posed to me when we were having a conversation about this stuff. And so it kind of led to us going into this stuff. So, yeah, why did you want to talk about the middling movies? What kind of sparked your desire to talk about the middling MCU films?
It just kind of got to this. I've been rewatching some Marvel movies lately, going through them kind of slowly. And we always talk about the great Marvel films, the reason that we fell in love with the MCU, the ones that really brought us all together. And then particularly lately, we've been bitching about the bad Marvel films and how they lost their groove and all of those things. And to some degree, I started to think that maybe the backbone of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is in that sort of top of the middle. like those ones that, like, they don't, maybe they don't qualify as great, but they are the ones where they're so solid. Like, I think if we didn't have those solid ones in the middle, the great ones wouldn't make the difference. That was the big, that was sort of the thought. And it kind of led, it kind of led to us going, well, which ones are the great ones? And right, which ones are just good? And where is the, you know, where are, and where is the term you used, middling ones? And I went, I think there's an interesting conversation here, not just in terms of ranking the films, although I'm sure you and I will disagree on some of that, but sure, in terms of what is it that makes a solid Marvel movie? You know, what is it? You know, we know what makes some of the great ones great, but what makes a solid one solid?
That was the thing. Well, do you want to start with that? Do you want to start with what you think makes, or do you want to say that afterwards after we discuss these films?
I think we need to figure out what's in these categories. Otherwise, we can't figure out what they have in common. You know,
sounds good to me. All right, I've got my list, and everyone who's following along at home, you can pull out your list of the MCU movies. And Steve, how was it for you separating the great, the good, the middling, and the ugly films? How did you, how was that process for you?
The ends were pretty easy and the middle got real, real hard. It's, there's no question. I know what a great film is and I know what a shitty film is.
Yeah.
But when you get into the sort of like, well, is this good or middling or is this middling or bad? That's where it started to get a little bit difficult for me. And I think also that's where it gets really personal, because the thing about it is that if you love this character and you love this actor and the movie is meh, you might still go, no, it was good. And if you're not a fan of those characters or those actors or the, then it doesn't matter. It's going to take a lot more for it to perform at a good level.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that as well. I tell you this, Steve, I know we had talked yesterday about it, and your process is like, I found myself only struggling on two or three of these, but I've got way more good movies than middling movies. And so it's going to be interesting to see, although I do have some surprises in the middling versus the good. And so this is going to be an interesting conversation to have. I mean, I'm pretty set on the ugly, and we might, I don't know if we're going to diverge from the ugly that much. But I think the good and the middling is going to be where we kind of have our interesting conversations. So go ahead.
That's what I was going to ask is, like, what I was thinking is a little, we could kind of go back and like start with the great maybe, and we each get to pick one. And if there's no disagreement about it, then we go, okay, that is solidly on the great list. And then if we have disagreement, then I think we'll have to have some discussion and maybe we'll decide between the two of us where we're going to end up putting it. What do you
think? Sounds good. Okay, sure. That sounds good. Do you want to start or do you want me to start?
I am happy to start, and I will start with a movie that we recently, fairly recently did on the Cinephiles that I think is truly great and is probably for me the most heartfelt movie of the entire MCU, and that's Guardians of the Galaxy. I absolutely love it. I'll watch it anytime. I think it is a great movie, and I think it is a groundbreaking movie in terms of saying what these superhero movies could be, you know?
Yeah. I do. I think it's a fantastic film. Definitely, maybe the greatest film James Gunn has done to date. I think it's a great.
I don't think there's even an argument that it's the greatest film he's ever done.
I think it's a great expression of who he is, a great expression of his approach to superhero movies and how he sees these characters and where James Gunn really does his best work, and that is in the character development of the people in his movies, right? And I think you're right there. So I agree with Guardians of the Galaxy. I will move to Avengers Infinity War. That is one of the most rewatchable movies for me. And I think that's an absolute great film that deserves to be at the top of the list.
I couldn't agree more. And in particular, for Infinity War, I always got to put in, this isn't a category I think anybody should judge films by, but I always do, which is degree of difficulty. Mm-hmm. The degree of difficulty to service all of these characters in a satisfying way and still have a plot that advances in a story that makes sense it's off the charts hard. It is incredibly difficult, and they deliver. There are so many solid emotional moments in Infinity War. Like, I think it's incredibly impressive.
I agree. Hey, Cinephiles fans, this is John. You know, summer always changes how I get dressed, and I'm sure a lot of you who are listening to me right now feel the same way. I want pieces that feel lighter and more breathable, things that are easy but still put together. And that's why I keep coming back to Quince. They focus on high-quality essentials that feel and look amazing. I mean, we're talking breathable linen and soft organic cotton. It's that rare balance where everything feels elevated but still effortless. I know a lot of people love to wear linen for the summer, and they've got European linen pants and shirts that are perfect for the warm weather, and they start at just $34. Their tees are soft and easy to wear, and their lightweight cotton sweaters are perfect for cooler summer nights. Everything at Quince is priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands, and they work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. I know recently I bought myself a V-neck cotton tee from Quince, and it was fantastic. It fits so well on me, so smooth, so soft on my skin, very breathable. And I also got one of their soft cotton zip-up hoodies to wear during the summer, and it's been a revelation, honestly. The fabric is so warm for those cool summer nights, but still light and breathable for those hotter summer days. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/cinephiles for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/cinephiles for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/cinephiles.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. My first feeling when I think about the fact that it's almost summer is excitement. The kid's going to be out of school. We got vacation plans, family plans, projects around the house. But then I start to think about it and I realize my kid's going to be out of school. I've got travel arrangements to figure out, family visits to schedule, and those projects around the house aren't going to do themselves. Plus, my work doesn't stop when the days get longer. In other words, when I think about the summer, anticipation can morph pretty quickly into just plain stress. I absolutely want to have a great summer with incredible experiences for my family, but my stress isn't going to help. So if I want to be the best dad I can be, I need to take care of myself, and sometimes that means I need a little help. BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. They do the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations. You don't have to be on this journey alone. Find support and have someone with you in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hey everyone, this is John from The Cinephiles, and if there's something I've come to know recently, it is the struggle with losing weight. You know, you guys know I've lost recently 40 pounds, but it took a little bit of time and took some effort. You've all got weight loss goals just like I did, but hitting them is another story. Well, enter Weight Loss by Hims. It's designed to support you in losing the weight and keeping it off. And Hims now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. You don't just want to lose weight. You want to look better and feel better. With Wegovy at Hims, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite and eat less, so success is within reach. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss, so there are no needles needed. And through Hims, everything happens online. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. Ready to reach your goals? Visit hims.com/cinephiles to get a personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's hims.com/cinephiles, hims.com/cinephiles. Weight loss by Hims is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit hims.com. So what's your next one?
Well, I'm going in a slightly different direction. Another one we've talked about on The Cinephiles. And for me, by the way, I feel there is a theme of what makes these Marvel MC movies great. What makes the great ones great? Because my next one is Captain America Winter Soldier, which is absolutely fantastic. And the thing about it is that particularly if you look at Guardians and Captain America and Winter Soldiers, these are movies that have a vision. They're not just saying we're going to do a superhero movie. They have a vision of a particular way of looking at the world. And for Guardians of the Galaxy is this wacky bunch of losers who we shouldn't like, but we actually love, all coming together. It's deeply heartfelt, great sense of humor, and all the incredible music. And Winter Soldier is that 70s spy thriller. You know, it's going, yeah. We're going to take Captain America and put him in this different place and put him in a situation that where his Captain American-ness is kind of coming up against the reality. And I think it's a fantastic film.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Winter Soldier is on my top of the list, top of great movies list as well. Yeah, the 70s thing is important. I also think at the time that that film came out, right? This was the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and already critics were starting to like dismiss it as just kind of frivolous and comic book movies. Critics resisted the oncoming of the Marvel machine, and certainly they were not happy to see this kind of taken over. Well, I feel like Winter Soldier was the answer to that. I don't think it was intentionally the answer to that, but it became the answer to that because it showed what these movies can do, what they can explore, what they can evoke, and that they can reach the classic status of things like 3 Days of the Condor or the Parallax View or whatever your the Iger section, whatever your favorite 70s like kind of spy thriller film is. They're able to do it while also introducing new characters, pushing the narratives that are going on with their current characters and evolving them as characters and questioning systemic stuff, questioning how to protect ourselves, a government agency that's probably gone wild and been infiltrated by Hydra. So there was so much there that I just kind of love in Winter Soldier and exploring, of course, at the heart of it, what happens when a friendship gets reborn, but your friend has been brainwashed and has been committing murders for decades. What do you do with that? So,
I mean, it's always been tough whenever I faced that circumstance myself. I mean, it's
yeah, I'm sure that's
killer. I think,
but the less about Hoover, the less we say about Hoover, the better. Let's move on.
Oh, so many Hoover stories. But the other thing I think is that it's like when Hollywood was first toying with superhero movies. There was always the feeling, and as a comic book geek, I always resented it of like, oh, we're doing another of those kid stuff things, not too smart, not too deep, because this is all just, fun, silly things. And what Winter Soldier says is goes, no, this is a superhero movie. We're going to give you all the superhero goodness you want, but this is about something, you know?
Yeah. A more serious take for sure. Was that yours?
That was mine,
right? Okay, I mean,
it's both of ours. It belongs to everyone, I think.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go to Infinity Endgame just to kind of do the 1-2 from Avengers Endgame, just to do the 1-2 from an Infinity War 2 Endgame. Endgame is probably the most rewatchable film for me in the MCU, and it's a long one, but I put it on all the time. I just kind of love Endgame. I think Infinity War is a slightly better film, but I prefer Endgame in terms of a watch. And so I just kind of love to put that because of where they go in this, what they explore, the questions they ask, the humor. I don't mind Fat Thor. I like what goes on with Robert Downey Jr. and the sacrifice that he has to make Tony Stark and what Cap does, and also the jokes around time travel with Ant-Man and the Hulk and all of that, and seeing the progression of Nebula and her seeing the younger part of herself and having that conversation. If people always talk about what would you tell your younger self? Well, here is legitimately that scene there in the film. So much to enjoy in Endgame, and I love the way they wrap it up. But when it's over.
So you're going to be surprised to hear me say this. I do have Endgame on my great films list, but it drifted towards the bottom and I kept thinking about moving it to good. And here's the thing about it is, I think as a film as a whole, just thinking of it, not as part of the MCU, not as the culmination of all these different movies, bringing all these characters together, I think it is definitely less good than Infinity War. I think it kind of drifts a little bit. There are parts in it that I care less about, parts in it I care more about. But when it delivers, it delivers like crazy. There really are very few more movies filled with more satisfying payoffs than Endgame. And again, I put it on this degree difficulty scale where I'm like, that was so hard to do. That was so hard to give. I mean, because it's not just our main Avengers characters that have great moments. You have also, which I watch it all the time. Every time it pops up on social media, the big opening up the thing and all the heroes showing up at Avengers moment.
Of course.
I've watched it so many times and it is so satisfying because of this thing. And this is the thing. So I have a theory about what makes the great movies great. Infinity War and Endgame don't fit in it, because what Infinity War and Endgame are is a culmination of this is what the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe can deliver when it's all working together perfectly. Now, that's not what I think is great about Guardians of the Galaxy or Winter Soldier or some of the other ones I put on the great list. This okay. is this is the delivery of the promise of the MCU happens in Infinity War and Endgame, you know, which so is
you, okay.
So no, I am putting on the great list.
Okay,
your question.
But you don't define them as the. I'm confused on the delineation you're making. You're saying they belong in the great movie conversation, but you're saying they're not what make the MCU movies great.
No, let me explain, because I have said this all terribly. So I will say what my theory is, and then I'll say what I want to say about Infinity War. My theory is basically all the movies on my great MCU list are made by filmmakers with a true vision that was unique.
Yeah.
And so that certainly applies to the two we've already talked about, Guardians of the Galaxy and Winter Soldier, and I think it's going to apply to some of the other ones that'll go on this list.
Sure.
But I think Infinity War and Endgame, why they deserve to be on this list, is that they are what Marvel said they can do that I think none of us believed, which is take a whole bunch of characters from a whole bunch of different movies and a whole bunch of different stories and bring them all together and deliver an ultimate story, an ultimate Marvel story, and make it satisfying. That's why. So I don't see Infinity War and Endgame as a visionary film the way I see Guardians of the Galaxy. I see them as the culmination of it is exactly the promise that Marvel is failing to deliver on right now, which is with the multiverse saga and maybe what we're going to see next with the next Avengers movie, of trying to bring in all these threads and make them work. In Infinity War and Endgame, they succeeded in bringing in all the threads and makes them work. That's where the greatness is to me.
So let me challenge your point, because I like this, but let me challenge a little bit. So what separates Infinity War and Endgame from Return of the King? Return of the King is also a culmination. Is also all these separate storylines and separate characters all coming together. And it is the promise of the J.R.R. Tolkien thing. So would you say that Return of the King is not a film that makes the greatness of it?
Well, first of all, I love Return of the King. And the other one you could put in Deathly Hallows too, which is J.K. Rowling bringing
a
big story. The difference is that The Lord of the Rings was already written. They had already figured, J.R.R. Tolkien had already figured all those things out. J.K. Rowling had figured out, she planned all her plans and playoffs. Right, when you get to Infinity War and Endgame, you have all these different movies and all these different threads made by all these different filmmakers. And
but
they
using Infinity Gauntlet as the story, the foundation.
I'm saying, so if your question is, do I think they're in the category with Return of the King? Yes, I think Return of the King is doing the same thing. What's different, the other difference is that the Lord of the Rings movie, that's one vision. That's J.R.R. Tolkien and that's Peter Jackson. Whereas this is the vast corporate network of the MCU all having to work together with many, many different writers feeding these two directors to make those things. I just think that is an unbelievable accomplishment.
That's a fair point. It could be a short down the road. I love this conversation. We don't have time for it today, but I love this conversation. All right. So who's next?
I think it's me who's next.
Yeah.
And I will go to what I consider another visionary film, which is Thor Ragnarok. Can only be made by Taika Waititi. It has its own sense of humor, its own sense of style. I liked Thor up to this point, but this is where Thor got figured out in a way that was fantastic. Thor Ragnarok is on my great list.
I 100% agree with you. What an unusual take on Thor that we hadn't seen from the previous two films, and completely saved the character for a lot of fans. I like the first two movies. I don't think they're that great, but I like them. Maybe a couple of them are in the middling section. But I think this is the film that I think this is the film that like absolutely goes next level and with the character and delivers on the promise and great humor while also telling a really poignant story about a son realizing how the mistakes of his father coming through his firstborn child and him coming to terms with that, but also coming to terms with the loss of his father, but also this new relationship with his brother. Like there's so much that explored in Ragnarok besides the humor. There's a really sound emotional story being told that's great in Ragnarok. So the next one I will throw in I would agree with Steve, another visionary filmmaker and film, and that's Black Panther. To me, Black Panther is in the great movies, still the only Marvel movie to be nominated for Best Picture. Ryan Coogler just won two Oscars or a multiple Oscars for his films, for his film from his film Sinners. And so this is a visionary filmmaker. And I think Black Panther, much more than Wakanda Forever, Black Panther is a great expression of a visionary filmmaker and a fantastic film.
You will get no argument whatsoever from me. I mean, that's where I, you know, that's like, and it's funny, like there's one that I think is going to get on the great list that we'll see if it gets there. It doesn't fit my category, but this is this thing of like, you have Ryan Coogler, you have Taika Waititi, you have James Gunn. These are people who came in with a vision who said, I can take your superhero movie and I can do something and say something that I want to say with it. And Black Panther is, you know, it's one of those movies that I think earns the hype that was around it at the time.
Oh, like,
I mean, it was such a big moment when that movie came out. And I think it absolutely deserves it. And when I've rewatched it, I like it just as much every time.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. All right. What's your next one?
My next one is a very different. It's in a very, very different place, I think. But my next one is Spider-Man No Way Home.
That is on my list. I was wondering if you were going to put it on there. So, yes, I agree. Spider-Man No Way Home.
This is the thing. It's like, I really think that mostly we can agree on great. Maybe we'll disagree on one or two. And mostly we'll probably agree on ugly, but it's the middle that'll be interesting. I think Spider-Man No Way Home is both a really, really good movie.
And
had all sorts of, you know, behind the scenes and geek news and stuff that people got extra thrilled. It came right in the end of the pandemic when sometimes a movie hits at the right time, you know, where just we needed a movie that felt like this. It's deeply emotional. I think the plot, I won't say the plot doesn't make much sense. I mean, there's some things in the plot that are kind of like, wait, what's going on? And which universes? And why is this happening? And it doesn't matter at all because just the Tom Holland Spider-Man story is great. And then you get to have your two Spider-Mans that we love come back and have completely satisfying arcs and even have great satisfying arcs for villains who didn't get good arcs. I mean, the amount of things it's delivering on for us is amazing.
Yeah. Agreed. When I looked at it, I was like, no, it belongs in the great list. The level of difficulty, as you were mentioning with Infinity War and Endgame, to bring three Spider-Men together from two franchises that went defunct in essence and weave them into this very interesting story about what's going on with this Spider-Man who is having to deal with the Uncle Ben situation finally in his film and how these Spider-Men come together to guide him and nurture him and teach him about becoming Spider-Man, that they've all gone through this stuff and how it all works. And then the sacrifice he makes so that, you know, everyone can function in their lives and not be in danger. So he makes the ultimate decision by the end, the ultimate heroic decision by the end in order to save his friends. And we'll see how much of that they untangle or change when we see the next of a brand new day. But this is a fantastic film. And the usage of Doctor Strange works really well. And the journey that Tom Holland goes on as an actor, I think also by the end of the movie, it's just phenomenal, that scene between him and Goblin at the end. So,
the great one.
Hi, this is Steve. You know, most of us approach our health pretty haphazardly. We try to think about our diets, get in some exercise, and maybe even take a few supplements. But all of our bodies are unique, and in the end, it's always guesswork to figure out exactly what's working and what's not. True Diagnostic eliminates that guesswork. Their at-home test measures 180 biomarkers to give personalized recommendations for your energy, metabolism, and overall health. They use advanced epigenetic testing to create a personalized, actionable plan for your health, whether it's true age to measure how fast you're aging or true health to see what nutrients your body needs. This is real personal insights, not generic advice. With a quick at-home finger prick, True Age measures up to 180 biomarkers, and you receive digital results with a 90-day actionable plan. No guesswork, no generic advice. Now, I've done this myself, and not only was taking the test super easy, but the information was definitely useful. Right now, our listeners get 20% off at truediagnostic.com using the code CINEFILES20. That's truediagnostic.com and use code CINEFILES20 for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the combo kit as a one-time purchase or subscription.
I have only one more left on my list of the great ones. We've talked about them all up until Captain America Civil War. I put Civil War in the great one because to make Civil War work from the comics to the screen and be as effective as they were, and there are so many great moments throughout that movie, I absolutely love it. The introduction of Petey, the stuff that goes on with Vision and Scarlet Witch, the stuff that goes on with Iron Man and Tony, and then at the end, the battle there, and we as an audience, are you Team Cap or are you Team Iron Man? And I think that all plays out so well, and they do a nice job of changing the story to fit their MCU, and I think it's a great film.
Yeah, I went a little bit back and forth on this because there are parts of it that I don't love. You know, the Baron Zemo thing and the plot stuff about it. Little bit like I don't care that much. But, you know, he killed my mom. Like that sequence and the battle on that at the airport, it's one of the most satisfying battles because again, and this it's funny, I really should say I think there are two categories for me because there's the auteur category of Black Panther and Thor Ragnarok and Guardians. And then there is the deliver on the promise of Marvel category. And that's Civil War, Infinity War, and Endgame. And it 100% delivers on what I want it to deliver, you know?
Ironically, all directed by the Russo brothers. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. All right. That's all mine. Do you have that's any other? Mine. Okay.
These are the great films. We've locked it down.
We haven't ranked them. That may be down the road. But for now, those are the ones that we put in the great pile. So should we move to the ugly pile so that we kind of knock out both of them?
I absolutely think we should move to the ugly pile.
All right.
I think I did you just did the last one, so it's my turn now. Oh,
sure.
Ugliness. All right. Okay. I'm going to go with the one that I like the least, and that is Eternals.
I agree.
I it took me four nights, many cocktails. And we can blame the cocktails on this, but there were moments where I was like, I have no fucking idea what's going on. And maybe it was the cocktails, but I don't think so because I kept going like, wait, what does Angelina Jolie want? And where are they trying to go? And is this person good or bad? Or were they good and became bad? Or they bad and became good? And like, I just kept trying. I was holding onto that movie by my fingertips and was bored. To be confused and bored, it looks gorgeous, and I like many of the actors, and the designs are cool. Do not like that movie.
I have watched it three times.
Oh, Jesus.
In an effort to try to like the movie. Because the thing that I discovered when we did the MCU rewatch, The Lady Outlaw and I, is that I was like, well, some of these films I think I was a little harsher on than I remember being. Now, maybe because I've gotten older and I've gotten softer, which some of you may not believe, I've gotten softer and I'm like, a little more space. So with Eternals, after Vogel was going on about it sometime last year, I watched it again. And then earlier this year, I watched it again because I want to do video essays. And so this is a film that I rewatched and I'm like, oh, I want to break this thing down into an essay of why it doesn't work and be fair to it as opposed to just be like, it's terrible, you know? And so but it doesn't work. It really doesn't. There are moments, but to me, there's casting issues. To me, the idea of all of these characters being thrust into that, we have no idea who they are. And you don't do a good job of really laying down the groundwork for each of these characters, really give them through lines that make sense. And some of the scenes are played safe as opposed to bold and interesting. And I'm just really surprised that Chloe Zhao did this. And I think it's also an element of the executives coming in, because if you watch Hamnet, one of the best films, arguably my favorite film of last year, she is an incredible filmmaker who understands how to develop these storylines, develop these characters and see their progression as characters. And I thought that was missing throughout Eternals. I felt nothing, like nothing through the whole movie. And that is surprising to me. So, yeah,
I mean, that's why I say if I can't figure out what a character wants or is trying to do, it's really hard for me to feel anything for them.
Yeah, agreed. It's a bit soulless, which is really hard to say about a Marvel film and a Chloe Zhao film, which is surprising. Exactly. Let's say the controversy. I will say, no, you know what? Screw it. I'm leaning into it. My other ugly one is the Multiverse of Madness. I
agree. Oh,
yes.
It's a fucking shit show.
It's so bad, that movie. I don't understand why people love it. I don't understand how it made almost $1 billion. It is a film that just has so many mistakes in it. And the Dutch angles, like there's just so much of the Sam Raimi-ness That destroyed that film, and I just don't like it and never have, Steve.
I mean, I really hate... We went into an era, which I think we're now moving out of, where someone does... So when I was a kid, and there was something called Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was
a
1980s DC comic thing. And what it was at that time, there was Earth One, and there was Earth Two, and there was Earth Prime, and there was all these other Earths. And there was, you know, there was Golden Age characters, and then there was... And basically, DC said, this is a mess. Let's clean it all up. And so the purpose of Crisis on Infinite Earths was to get rid of the multiverse, to have just one universe. And then it ended up being a really big hit. And then Marvel next did Secret Wars, you know, where we get into this thing. And then this idea came along that people really like multiverses, as opposed to multiverses are messes created by continuity that goes on for 50, 60, 70 years. And so we got to this place where it's like Marvel went, they quadrupled down on the fucking multiverse. And it's and we've lived in that world for a while. And it's like, I don't want seven versions of this character. I don't want, I actually want to tell a story that has a beginning, middle, and an end about a character going through something. And so A, it was super confusing. B, it's trying to introduce all these other characters. C, it's trying to do fan service for Patrick Stewart and for all those things that they threw in there, none of which worked at all because it just felt thrown in. And see, they destroyed Wanda. I mean, they just ruined what they built this amazing character. They had this incredible actor playing this character. And then they just went, oh, she's crazy and evil. And it just was like, you know, not a good movie.
And repeating the same things we just saw in WandaVision. Exactly. All right, what's your next one?
My next one is a movie I genuinely really wanted to like and thought about putting it in middling. And I just can't really get behind it that much, and that is Captain Marvel.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. All right.
I want to like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I put it in my middling list because I can watch it, and I'm surprised when I did the rewatch that I found myself more interested. When's the last time you saw it?
Oh, it's been a while. It's been a while.
Yeah.
And I actually
wonder if it might work on
put it in the middling because it was one I was debating. Yeah. And you know what part of it is that, and maybe I'll just cheat a little bit because I think it was tainted a little bit by Marvel's, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. Well, do you want to?
Yeah. So I will definitely put Marvel's in the ugly.
Yeah. The Marvel's is talk about a shit show. The Marvel's is an utter shit show. And it's a shame. It's such a shame that these two women of color came in to direct these movies and it just did not work. It just did not work out. And it's such a shame because we've seen Ryan Coogler. We've seen Destin Daniel Cretton come in as men of color and really knock it out of the park with their movies. But these two films, it just Marvel's and Eternals, just utter shit shows from beginning to end. And it's a shame to see that because I think there was potential here and it just kind of all fell away. And there's a bad villain. When the three actresses are together, they're great. There's great chemistry there. Just the dialogue isn't that strong. The storyline isn't that great. The subplots with each of them and the dancing planet. So there was just so much about it. You're just like, what is happening?
So what's weird about that movie to me is that I felt like when I was watching it, I could see the movie they had intended to make and didn't make. And I couldn't reconstruct it now because it was a while ago that I saw it. But what I remember was like, oh, this character is doesn't trust anybody. And this character is pushing people away. And this character needs a fan. Like I could see that they created I don't remember what they were, but they'd created the character flaws so perfectly that they were the solution to each other's character flaws. And so it was really a perfect setup for the kind of Avengers Guardians of the Galaxy movie where you start with people in conflicts that come from very, very different places. And then they become a family. I could see that there were actually the bones for that were there. And I really like those actors. I really like the characters. And then it was like in the editing room or script revisions, they just cut out the soul of the movie and threw a bunch of stuff in to have more action or more jokes or more whatever. And so I really think there was a skeleton there. I bet there was a script that was a good script, but that is not a good movie.
Yeah. Some of the nice comments is the Marvels felt like Star Trek. Next Generation season one.
Maybe. That's not, you're not wrong.
Okay. So you have, so we've got Marvel's Multiverse of Madness and Eternals in there.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw a film that I was surprised in the end to throw in. And I watched a little bit of it just to kind of make my decision here. But I got to throw in Brave New World. I was on the fence about it. I wasn't sure about it. Then I watched it again and I was like, you know what? As much as I enjoyed it in the theater, I do think this film is just an utter Frankenstein of a movie and just not a good film in the end. And it, you know, there's so much, as you were just mentioning about, you could see that there was a better movie there. Yeah. In the Marvels. There was such a better movie here in Brave New World. If they had just gone with the original vision of leaning into what it's like to be a black superhero in America, but all the anti-DEI and all this anti-woke bullshit killed it. They overthought it. They tried to go safe with it. And it just is an utter Frankenstein movie. It becomes a Red Hulk movie when it's called Captain America Brave New World. And I think that's the biggest mistake of the film overall.
I wouldn't hesitate for a second to put it on the ugly list. Sadly, I wanted it to be great. I honestly think we can say that it's because of, you know, DEI and political things, but I think they chickened out when they did Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Like,
yeah.
I think they had set up that was what that series was about, and they really didn't do it. And I think that's an amazing idea to talk about. That is hugely dramatic and interesting.
Yeah.
And again, watching Brave New World, I'm literally going like, so this is the story? Like, this is what we're doing? Yeah. Like, and when you get to the big fight scene with Red Hulk, I so don't care.
Yeah.
I think I'll say this pretty much about every one of these. I like all the actors.
Yeah.
I like the characters. Sam is the Sam that you meet in Captain America, the Winter Soldier is this veteran, friendly, strong sense of humor, deeply wise person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he disappears. And we don't really see him. And we certainly don't see that character for me in Brave New World. I don't think they wrote him properly.
Agreed. All right. Do you have any more in the ugly? I have one more. Do you have any more?
I have two more.
Okay. Ooh, okay.
I don't like Love and Thunder. I'm sorry. I think it's ugly.
Oh, Love and Thunder.
Yeah.
I have it in my middling, but I was debating about it. So... yeah, okay. I mean, we're saying that a great Christian Bale performance belongs in the ugly. I know.
You know what? Again, there's it's I don't okay. think it, I'm going to say something you're really going to like, because on some level I'm going to say these lists cannot be objective. These are always subjective.
Of course. You
know? And so the thing about I believe that if Thor Ragnarok had never existed, Thor Love and Thunder would be middling.
Oh, that's a fair point. A fair point in comparison. Yeah.
My expectation coming into Love and Thunder was like, here we go. I'm so excited. And you know, you have the thing like there's the great episode of The Simpsons where they go to Camp Krusty and Krusty never shows up or they're all freezing. They'll go, Krusty will come. Someday Krusty will come. And I remember watching Love and Thunder. It's like, okay, it's going to be good. No, it's going to be, oh, that was kind of funny. Oh, it's kind of, and then there's a certain point where you're like, no, this is not working for me.
Yeah, it's a shame. There was so much that they could have gotten right here. I mean, you have the Jane Foster cancer storyline and the gore, the God Butcher stuff. There was really poignant emotional terrain that they were exploring here. And it is such a shock that Taika, who did such a good job with it in Thor Ragnarok, again, when you strip away the jokes, there is a really poignant commentary about fathers and sons and daughters and this past sins and being forgiven and taking the mantle to be the leader. Like, there's so much. Why was that missing here in this movie? I agree. It just wasn't strong enough with the Jane Foster stuff or the gore. And even his child, like taking over Gore's child, like to essentially be the stepfather, the new father. It just, you know, there's just isn't that power to it that we like. I think there's still some fun jokes. I like the goat stuff. I know people don't like the goat stuff, but I love it. But in the end, it just doesn't hold together. So you're right. I'll put it in the ugly as well.
All right.
All right.
I'm guessing I know what your last one is, but who knows? Did you have another
one? I think it's Iron Man 2. That's my other one.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I have Iron Man 2 in middling.
Okay.
And then I have another one that's still in, which is Quantumania.
Yeah, I will fight to the death to defend Quantumania. I am one of those rare people that like that movie. And as Steve said at the time, when he came on here, These are our lists, and they're going to be subjective. And I cannot explain to you why Quantumania works for me, but it does. And it does. And I put it in the middling category because I don't think it 100% gets there. But I find that I have a wonderful time. So it is probably a guilty pleasure movie, like A Million Ways to Die in the West or Hudson Hawk. Like, I know objectively people are like, I get what your points of views and why you don't like the movie, that it is not a good movie. But for me, I do like it. However, I know that a lot of people feel that it's an ugly film, so I can move it.
No. I actually think it should go in middling. I was thinking about it as you said it. And this is what's the difference here? Is that in the difference between like, let's say Brave New World or Marvel's or Multiverse of Madness, there's really not much there that I can say that I really like. And I'm not even really enjoying, like, Chris Hemsworth, one of the most charming actors you could possibly imagine. Very charming. I did not find him that charming because he's trying too hard to be charming, I think, in Love and Thunder. Whereas in Quantumania, even though I don't think the movie works, I don't think it makes sense, I don't think that it doesn't move me in any way. What's his name, whose name just went out of my head, is Paul still Rudd. Hilarious. Paul Rudd is still super charming. And the rest of the cast is charmingly walking through this movie I don't think works. And that, to me, does make me go, no, I think it should be in middling. This is not a shit show. It's a movie that doesn't work great, but I wouldn't, you know, but I wouldn't throw it out of bed. I'd watch it on an airplane. that's sort of the middling category.
All right. So then I'll move Iron Man 2 into middling.
The thing about Iron Man 2 is I think it is perfectly middling.
Should we talk about it now? Because it's middling. We should save it for middling, or do you want to go into it now?
We'll save it for middling.
We'll save it for middling. Because I got to run a tight ship. I got a tight day today. Good movies, middling. Do you want to go to good movies now? Shall we break down our good movies and then move into middling? Or do you want to middling now?
But I could feel it's going to get harder now. No, we've agreed on a lot of stuff up to this point.
The first two sets of the workout, we're doing all right. Now let's get to the third set.
Am I turn or your turn?
Yeah. I think, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
So good. I'm going to start off with Iron Man, the first Iron Man. And I'll say what I've said this now probably many, many times on the Cinephiles, which is my real feeling about Iron Man is that it is a B, maybe B+ movie, barely, with an A+ unbelievable charismatic performance from Robert Downey Jr. I think when you actually just kind of remove Robert Downey Jr. from the movie and just think about the story and the special effects and what happens and all, it's fine. It would be middling, you know, but Robert Downey Jr. is so great. He's electrifying every moment he's on screen, and that moves it up for me to good.
I agree with you 100%. He is the reason to watch it. He is literally Atlas holding up the MCU. This is him taking that position in that movie. We would not have the MCU without that Iron Man movie. I don't care what anybody says. So I agree with you 100%. All right. So then I will go phase one, staying in phase one. I will say Captain America, the First Avenger is a good movie. I love this movie. I remember Shannon and I saw it at Comic-Con. It was a secret screening. There was 10 people in the theater because people didn't seem to be that interested in it. And we loved it. And so, yes, there are third act issues with the film, but not enough to overcome the greatness of the performance of Chris Evans, Haley Atwell, and even Hugo Weaving at times in the movie, and the introduction of Hydra and all, and the Red Skull and all that, and Tommy Lee Jones. It's just so much to enjoy, along with Stanley Tucci and his performance, and of course, Sebastian Stan. So to me, it is a very special place in my heart, Captain America, the First Avenger.
You know what's funny? I don't know if I've ever said this theory to you, but I think there is a connection between the movies Dirty Dozen, Stripes, and now I'm going to add to it that I hadn't thought about before of Captain America, First Avenger, which is that Stripes and Dirty Dozen, Act One is fantastic when you're training, when you're sort of learning the characters and all that stuff.
Yeah.
In both of those movies, Act Two, when you're in the War Games sort of section, is fun and really good. Yeah. And Act Three in both Dirty Dozen and is kind of, when we're actually on the mission, is actually less good than the beginning. I think the same is true of Captain America, First Avenger. When we meet Steve, it is great.
When
he first becomes Captain America, it's really good. And then when we get to the final mission against Hydra, it's fine. You know, it does what it needs to do, but it doesn't live up to Act One in any way. but it's good.
It's not enough to capsize the movie, which is what you want in the end. You still walk away feeling good. All right, what's your next one?
This is actually where this whole conversation started, because the movie I was watching was Doctor Strange. And yes, I think Doctor Strange is so solid. It is absolutely not a great movie. You know what I mean? There's not a moment that I would think of saying this is a great movie, but I totally will watch it again. I think they nail the character. They understand the tone. I think the buildup of the bad guys, the mystery with the Ancient One, I think all that stuff is working really, really well. And the cool, and they understand like what they need to do with this kind of asshole, arrogant guy as your main character, and what the journey he goes on is perfectly good, perfectly strong. It is a solid, high level, good MCU movie.
When Doctor Strange came out, and I agree with you 100%. When Doctor Strange came out, I was surprised to see some critics not liking the movie or bashing the movie. So in my small act of defiance, I went and saw the film 3 times, paid full price for the ticket to show my appreciation for the film. Because this film is really one of the gems of the MCU, in my opinion. I love Cumberbatch in this film. Love it. Yes, his American accent gets better as he gets in the MCU later on. But I like what it's saying about the arrogance of this guy and what he has to go through and how he has to, you know, in a sense, genuflect to humble himself before he can achieve true greatness. And what is possible if you humble yourself, if you get rid of these perceptions that you put out in the world, because your arrogance is always born from a place of insecurity. How do you deconstruct that to find out what's really going on and see what it's like to care about people and connect with people? And I think it's great throughout the movie, and to see what happens with Chiwetel Ejiofor's character by the end of the movie and how he turns because of what happens with the Chosen One. It's amazing. So to me, there's so much to enjoy. And even the sequence with Rachel McAdams in the hospital when they're fighting on the spiritual plane, just a great, great action stuff overall. Do I wish she'd had more to do in the film? 1,000,000%. Do I think she's one of the most underused characters in the MCU? 1,000,000%. She's a great actress. So I think that is a negative. But overall, I love the way I feel coming out of Doctor Strange, and I'm pissed that Scott Derrickson didn't get a chance to do Multiverse of Madness and we got stuck with Sam Raimi, because I think he almost killed it.
Well, I never know where to put the blame. I think Sam Raimi is Sam Raimi. Sometimes I like Sam Raimi movies, sometimes I'd like them less. But to me, it's Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness is barely a Doctor Strange story, you know?
Yeah.
It's all over the place, you know?
So then mine is Ant-Man. I think Ant-Man is such a good movie. I mean, almost great. Ant-Man is so good that it's almost great, but it's so good. It's like almost, I don't know, pretty good. Like good, pretty good. You know, it's so much fun. Paul Rudd is so good in here. Michael Douglas, Evangeline Lilly, and Michael Pena, who is quietly the star of the film.
So good.
The thing that keeps it from being great is the Corey Stoll Bumble or Yellow Jacket storyline. Yes. It's just like, damn it. Corey's a damn good actor, but it just doesn't work yet.
Well, it's funny. The whole origins of this conversation is when I was going, what's the most solid of the good? What is the top of the good? And the last two movies are my example, which is Doctor Strange and Ant-Man. They are not great films, but man, Ant-Man is a joy to watch. And boy, they get the relationships just right and advance the characters perfectly, and it's perfectly cast. I agree with you. The only weak side is the bad guy. And I remember when we did the podcast, there was just so many times like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? You're just being a bad guy. This doesn't make any sense at all. But putting that aside, it's really fun.
Yeah.
My next one, I think, and I saw this in one of the comments, it might even have been one of the Streamlabs or Super Chats, is Shang-Chi. And I agree with that comment that I saw, which is this is the most underrated Marvel movie, and it is a crime that we have not kept going with this character and this world, which is fantastic.
Yeah. It is absolutely a crime that we don't have. We're still waiting on a sequel. I don't know what the logic or the thinking was. Maybe they didn't anticipate it being a great movie. I don't know, and they weren't prepared for it. Simu Liu has unfortunately taken hits for this because there has not been a sequel. He should be such a mainstay in the MCU. We should have seen him pop up in a number of things by now. Yeah, he's so great in the film. And what we get from him and, what's her name? I forget the actress's name. Awkwafina. What we get from them and their chemistry So much fun. That bus chase scene is absolutely incredible. And bringing in Terrence to have him be a part of the film as well, and that back and forth with him and Shang-Chi's is figuring out how to be an actor and how to be a hero, and all of that goes on. And the stuff with his dad, the Ten Rings, like, there's just so much. Yes, the end battle gets a little CGI. I get that. But if I can forgive it in Black Panther, I can fucking forgive it here. And I think Shang-Chi is just an excellent. It's so fun to rewatch that movie. It is such a fun movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. It deserved much better than it's gotten from Disney and Feige. You know?
But by the way, apropos of nothing, I have a new idea for a Cinephile short for people who want to come to patreon.com/thecinephiles, which is clips that you regularly rewatch on YouTube. One of mine is the bus fight in Shang-Chi. I think it is a perfectly constructed fight scene. It's not only great choreography, it's not only thrilling and exciting, but it has an actual story going on as she realizes what this person she thought she knew is really like. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Okay, so then I will move on to Avengers. I think Avengers is a good movie. But I do think the dialogue is dated. I do think some of the stuff that goes on in the film is a little uncomfortable when you remember that Joss Whedon made the film. But you can't deny the fact that bringing all of these characters together, people forget how insane the idea was. The fact that he pulled it off so effectively deserves all kinds of credit. And we get, by the end of the film, some great scenes with them together. This is a film where the end battle scene does work, and the beats of it are so well done, and them coming together as a team is so great. So yeah, Avengers.
I think it definitely deserves being there. It has drifted lower. Maybe the Avengers has dropped down more in my estimation than any other movie in the MCU, just kind of consistently. I don't think it's bad. I think it's a good movie. I think it's almost like the opposite thing that I said about Ragnarok to Love and Thunder, which is that in the context, Love and Thunder becomes worse. Avengers is so important. It has to be in the good, you know, like that's where it should be. It is extremely important to the MCU. It's extremely important to film, and it is good, you know?
Yeah, it is. All right. What's your next one?
Yeah. What do I want to say here? I'm going to go with Spider-Man Homecoming.
Okay. Yep. On my list.
Which I thought about middling because I think there are, to me, a few things in this that are great, and the rest of the movie is totally fine. The first of all, Tom Holland as Spider-Man is great. I mean, that he's just like, the casting is perfect and he's wonderful to watch. I enjoy him every minute. I think the moment of the reveal with Michael Keaton is one of the great, great moments of all time, you know? And I think that moment overshadows the whole movie because it is so dramatic and so that it elevates the movie. I might have put it in middling if that moment wasn't in the film. And I do like it. I mean, I totally like it. It delivers, but I don't, you know, it's like, oh yeah, they're in DC and I don't really care that much about all the action sequences so much. I really, really like the relationships, and I mean, he's such a good bad guy and he's so great. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I it's in the good movies, but that one has dropped down as the years have gone on. I agree, because the Keaton stuff is very well introduced, and there are good moments with him and Keaton, or Keaton on his own. But the stuff with his crew is so like, it just doesn't have that kind of wow that you want to see. But what you get to by the end with Spider-Man, I think is fantastic. And what he does, and the stuff with him and Happy, and the stuff with Tony, and even the stuff with Zendaya and the other MJ, like, I think it's so good, the joy you get, and Holland's performance. It's almost like Iron Man. Like, there are some issues, but in the end, it's Holland's performance that makes you like excited to see what's next.
And it delivers where it needs to deliver. You know, it doesn't deliver across the board. By the way, side note, is Happy like the biggest jerk in the MCU? Well, I rewatched Homecoming recently, and he's just terrible. He's dismissive. He's rude. He's arrogant. He's all sorts of terrible things.
He's a lunkhead. He's a lunkhead for sure. What's your next? Was that you or did I? Yeah, you did that one. Okay, so then mine, I would go to, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. That is a good movie to me.
I'm surprised how much we're going to agree on this. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's a good movie. I do think it's not a great movie, because I think the ego stuff gets a little kind of muddled as you get to that point. some of the jokes don't 100% land. And separating the team out, I didn't mind it. I just didn't think the storylines separately were as strong as they could have been together. And I think that keeps it from being a great film. But overall, I love the progression of the characters. I love the introduction of Mantis. Kurt Russell is great. And that scene when Star-Lord realizes that his father killed his mother, sweet Mary, mother of God, the reaction from Chris Pratt is amazing. And of course, the Yondu moment at the end, which wrecks me every time. So yeah, such a good
one. To me, it's one where it does deserve to be there, but it's also has gone down a little bit in my estimation when I rewatched it fairly recently. And it's sort of like, is the whole really as good as the sum of the parts? There are all these parts that are really, really good. But yeah, I think it definitely deserves to be on in our good list.
Yeah.
I have one more in my good list.
Wow.
Really too much.
I know I have four more. Wow, this is going to be interesting. Okay, go ahead.
As I said, it's the middling to the good that I really, really went back and forth. Yeah. So my guess is you'll persuade me on a few of them. But my last one on the good list is Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yes, that's on my list of the good list. Yeah, for sure.
This is one where I really think it's really about the sum of the parts. Like the story is about Deadpool and multiverses and has to get a Wolverine and who he's. It doesn't even matter. What matters is when Hugh Jackman is walking in shirtless to what's the Madonna song? Is it Like a Prayer?
Yeah, like a prayer. Yeah.
I mean, that moment is one of the greatest moments in cinema. So like, yeah, the movie is sort of all over the place, but it's the all over the place that is charming and enjoyable and super fun.
I agree. It's not the strongest Deadpool movie, as people will hear me say on part one of our discussion of Deadpool. But I think it's such a fun watch and enjoyable. And if you just kind of don't worry about the plot, which really doesn't hold together strongly, especially when the TVA gets involved, even more so, you just kind of go, ugh. But like in the end, and especially because like even the stuff with Emma Corrin, as great as she's presented, they kind of deal with it pretty simply by the end of the movie. And it doesn't carry that like, that overall effect, that residue, that hangover of having gone toe-to-toe with her, which I think the film could have benefited from. But yes, it's a very good film, and it's a good film. I won't say very good, but it's a good film, and it's fun to rewatch for sure.
Yep.
All right, so that's the end of all yours.
I'm curious which ones are going to come up and if they're one of the ones I was on the fence about.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I think that is a good movie.
This is definitely one I was on the fence about. Go ahead. I have thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the way they explore Rocket's backstory is so powerful in that movie. And I know that's a word I overuse sometimes, but it really is. Like the exploration, you see the backstory of what goes on with him, with the High Executioner and the way he's treated and the connection with the other animals that are there, what goes on with them. And then when he comes back, what that reaction is like as well. I do think the Adam Warlock stuff is the stuff where I think there's issues with the movie. It's not as strong as I would like it to be. But I do like the journey they go on. This is the final hurrah of this whole crew. And by the end, where we get to with him and his grandfather, I thought was very touching. And the stuff he explores with Nebula, with Gamora, all of the stuff. And that slow motion fight sequence with the needle drop, that is just stellar, stellar filmmaking from James Gunn. So I like Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't think it's... Some people have it like in the great category. I don't think it's in the great category, but I do think it's in the damn good category.
So, so here's my, you remember when we did Love Actually on the podcast and what we did was to break it into 9 or whatever short films.
Oh, yes, yes.
Individual films.
Yeah.
I think if the Rocket story was its own movie, not only would it be absolutely in the good category, it would be in the great category. I was lobbing. But the rest of the movie, I the grandfather thing, and I wasn't tracking it all. Like I just wasn't always doing it for me. Visually amazing, you know, like looks great, great music, obviously not surprising. But I just as every time it was the Rocket story, I was 100% in. I'm totally fine moving it up to good. I went back and forth like 5 times. So, but it's just sort of like the thing is, look, these are very serious decisions. One doesn't like just rush into something like that. I mean, this is important stuff.
Simply into Mordor.
One does not simply walk into Mordor. So, it's all on you because you have a couple more, I think.
Yeah, yeah. The other two good ones I have, I'll just have them back to back. They are the most recent, some of the most recent ones, Thunderbolts and Fantastic Four First Steps. I think those both are good movies.
Those are the two. Those are the other two that I was going back and forth about. All right.
So we can lock those down. We don't have to go in. Like, yeah, the mental health storyline is great, but doesn't 100% get there as strongly as I would like it to be. I think it had the potential to be great, but it didn't 100% get there. And Fantastic Four First Steps, damn good movie, but there are the things with the Galactus. You're just like, wait, what's the logic here? And it kind of falls apart near the end. So that's the issue there. But sure,
with those two movies, I've only seen each of them once, and I think those two movies, it was sort of, I was like, well, how much are they really sticking with me? I think with Fantastic Four, design wise and world building wise, it's awesome. Yeah. Love the actors. Like, I think they did a great job with the characters. It just seemed like it was trying to do way too much in a short space of time. And didn't 100% deliver it to me, but I totally enjoyed it. Thunderbolts is almost like the opposite, where it's kind of like it really delivered in terms of these characters coming together.
Yeah.
But I didn't find myself going, I can't wait for the next adventure of them being the new Avengers or anything like that. I never really felt that way, but I did enjoy the ride. That's why I kind of was more on middling, but I'm happy to have it again.
Okay. Well, then that means the films that are left, we agree on them as middling, it seems like. Yeah. Wow. All right. So how do you want to do this? And while you do this, I'm going to use the restroom real quick, Steve. So how do you want to do this? I will hear you. So please go ahead.
It's only fair that I have some time on my own. I think what's interesting about this category here, because these are some ones we have left. Thor, The Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, Thor Dark World, Avengers Age of Ultron, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Far From Home, Black Widow, and Wakanda Forever. So first of all, what's interesting is more than half of these are sequels, which I find to be a very interesting point. Thor was a movie that I liked a lot when I saw it in the theater, in the sense of you used to get comic books in a little bag every week. You would show up at the comic book store and they'd have your things and you'd read the latest story of a particular character. And they weren't all great, but you wanted to keep up. That's the level that Thor was for me, which is a perfectly enjoyable comic book. When you get to Thor: The Dark World, I think it really falls apart. And I still like the character, but it doesn't work as well. The Incredible Hulk has lots of good ideas. By the time you get to the final sequence, it is exactly what this category is, which is that it is middling. You know, it is fine. I wouldn't not watch it, but I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it. The same thing with Ant-Man and the Wasp is very similar to how I feel about Thor: The Dark World or really Iron Man 2 and Iron Man 3 for that matter, which is I like these characters. There's more of the same. It's kind of the same world. We're advancing things a little bit and I'm not getting all that much out of it.
Great points you're making here, Steve. Keep going, please.
And then Black Widow, I like, you know, and it was in that weird category where it came out in the pandemic. We were all at home. I think if there had been some hype, or maybe if I'd seen it in the theater with an audience rather than by myself late at night, I might have had a different feeling about it. But it's, this is why this is the middling category. Middling is not bad. It's just, it's fine. And as a comic book fan, I'll watch some of these again. Far From Home is the same thing. It honestly, like most of these, I would say all the sequel ones kind of suffer from the same thing, which is I still like these characters. They're fine. They have some action sequences. They have some ideas, but it's not knocking my socks off in any way.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say. So, Incredible Hulk. So with Incredible Hulk, I agree with a lot of what you said. I think as the film goes on, more gets exposed that you're just like, this isn't 100% working for me. I'm not connecting with this stuff. And I think Edward Norton is the wrong choice as well. I think you can start there. He's not a good choice for that character and what the character is trying to do, because Norton has a natural condescension, and that's not, I'm not saying scientists can't be arrogant, but Banner doesn't have that. And to have that element be there, I think is an issue overall. I liked the CGI. I liked the scene with him and Liv Tyler on the edge of the cliff there, having that conversation about him being a Hulk and her dealing with that and all that. But then you get the Sam Elliott stuff. And it's funny to me, I think the Ang Lee Hulk and the Incredible Hulk, the Leterrier Hulk, if you combine them into one movie, gotten a damn good movie, right? Because I think, what's his face is William Hurt's Ross is great, which is why they moved him into the MCU. It's great stuff. So in the end, so. Thor is, Brada is a great director. Henry V. I like his Hamlet, though it's not 100% the greatest, but I like him as a director. But Thor is a fine watch, but it's not magical, man. It's not as powerful as you want it to be. It's solid, but there's a lot of issues with it that keep it from being good. It's right. Middling. Because I don't ever find myself wanting to put it on again. Iron Man 3 is another one I put in middling, because to me, there's so much that falls apart once Guy Pearce comes in and the extremist stuff, and then throwing in and then having to move Pepper and give her something more to do. To me, it felt like tacked on and shoved in rather than organic. There hadn't been, Pepper hasn't been going like, I need to have powers, I need to have powers. That wasn't going through the first two movies. So to have it all of a sudden be a thing here and all this, it just as an excuse to give Paltrow more to do. It was so transparent that to me, it kind of undercut the film. And I thought Rebecca Hall was a bit of a waste in the movie with the character that they were doing with her. And she's a damn good actress. So I was disappointed by that.
I mean, honestly, so Iron Man 3, you know, I said there were these middling ones that could have been good. Iron Man 3 was a middling one that could have been ugly. I mean, you know, it was real.
Agreed.
Close. Yeah. And Iron Man 2, I think you put, it was like, that's close to me to ugly too.
Yeah.
The one that's hard to talk about for me that is now in our middling list is Wakanda Forever.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Here was my experience going to see the movie. Went to see the movie. And when that movie opens and it's beautiful and it's the funeral of T'Challa. And I was like, holy shit. He did it. He figured out how to do. And I was sobbing. And I was like, this is going to be dealing with the death of the king. And how do we deal with the death of the king? And it started sort of in that direction. And then a whole bunch of stuff happened, and I could feel when I was watching the movie, my interest kind of just flagging. And it's not bad. You know, it doesn't deserve the bad movie. There are beautiful moments in it, but it does not hold together as a whole film at all, in my opinion.
I agree. Even the Namor stuff, which I was loving from the trailers, was really excited to see quietly one of my favorite characters in the Marvel comic books. Even the way it was done, I wasn't 100% on board with, and was confused by how they didn't do a good job of laying this conflict out between them. And it's the rare Ryan Coogler film that doesn't 100% work for me. And this was just a problem. So by the end, the final battle, I really just couldn't care. Like, I just was like, okay, whatever. Shoving in the stuff with Martin Freeman and Julia Louis-Dreyfus just did not work at all.
Terrible.
Right. Ironheart, throwing Ironheart in. I think there was potential for that to work. It just felt like, okay, we got to spin this off. It just felt like it wasn't its own movie like Black Panther was. And it had to serve, I hate to say this word, but with this movie, but this phrase, it had to serve too many masters, and it didn't need to. It should have just been a streamlined, great sequel that dealt with the loss of T'Challa and how that affected everybody, right? And even the Sun stuff at the end, I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's a way to continue it. But yeah, the best person, Angela Bassett, is the best thing of the movie. Do like Namor, but it, again, they stumble with the stuff.
I like the casting and the idea and the design, but there was so much stuff where it was like, you know, and Shuri, I like her, but I wasn't emotionally involved in that really in the way that they wanted me to be. It wasn't working for me.
I would put Thor Dark World is another one that I like a lot of Thor Dark World, but the elf stuff is just so bad that it really kills a lot of the movie. The stuff with him and his brother and his mom, I think, is exceptional.
Yeah.
The stuff with him and Jane and Kat Dennings and Eric being crazy, Stellan Skarsgård, that is actually interesting. For me, who is not a massive scientific brain, to me, the science stuff was really interesting to watch how they all played it out and did it and setting the poles. That's cool. But the stuff with the elf is so just a waste. Christopher Eccleston, just a waste in it that I was like, I don't care. And so it just keeps it from being a good movie. It's a middling movie. Like, I could watch it, but I'm not, you know, clamoring to put it on. So, yeah.
I'm trying to see if we can come up with a few grand unified field theories.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Of why these movies got placed where they got placed. You know what I mean? Like,
I just say I'm not a good scientific brain, and Steve goes, let's come up with some unified theories and hypotheses. I'm like, okay, sure. Like,
what we can say about movies that are in each of these positions. So, like, you've heard my theory about The Great, which is they're either a visionary director who genuinely has something unique they want to say, or delivering on the promise of the MCU. That to me is all of the great films come under those two categories.
I can agree with that. Yeah.
I think all the ugly films are a goddamn mess. Mm-hmm. Like where there's all sorts of stuff they might have been trying to do, and you can feel, you sort of can feel the corporate studio involvement, and you can feel the notes, and you can feel they're trying to do, in all of them, they're trying to do too many things, and they're trying to deliver things that they think the audience wants, you know,
overthinking. Yes, 100%.
Yeah. I think what's interesting between the good and the middling is it seems to me that in the middling, there's mostly two things going on. One is they're largely sequels. So it's them trying to do more of the same. And in particular, sort of like, and now we will introduce a new villain for our person. And they'll kind of advance the stories, but it doesn't have any vision in terms of the direction. And none of these stories are really deeply emotional. You know, and with Wakanda Forever, you've lost your main character, so that's really hard to do. And then the other one is the introductions that don't 100% knock it out of the park, like Incredible Hulk, Black Widow, Captain Marvel, and Thor. You know, we're introducing a new character and we're doing an okay job, but we're not knocking it out of the park. So they're either the sequels that don't quite deliver or the introductions that don't quite deliver.
Yeah, I think those are excellent points. And the thing is, I also think the middling is that feeling of potential lost. Like that's the big thing, right? When you're like, oh my God, this could have been, you should have done. And you felt that while you're watching the movie. Like that's the thing that when the film, and you felt that more than once or too many times in one of these middling MCU films. And that's what puts it in the middling category. You feel it, you sense it when you're watching it. You're like, it doesn't make sense. Why didn't you do this? And so those are the things I think that's essential too to make a MCU film middling is you see the potential wasted or you ask too many questions about why they're doing this and don't like the answer when you see it happen on the screen, you know?
And I think for good, it's literally being a good movie is that story, characters, plot, all that stuff hangs together perfectly well. You understand, you're emotionally involved. They get the sense of humor and they get the tone right and it all works. Are we knocking it out of the park? Not necessarily. Is this the vision of a great visionary or is the degree of difficulty super hard? Not necessarily. But everything we're trying to do, we're doing successfully. That is the good range, you know?
I also think in the middling, which add one more thing, Steve, as I'm looking at these categories films you were talking, also the villains aren't good. The villains aren't good. Like that's a massive thing in all of these middling films that the villains aren't strong or aren't good. It doesn't mean the actors aren't good. They're good actors. It's the story. It's the construction of the villain. It's the villain's motivation. And then the villain's interactions and the way it's shot, the way he or she is shot, the way it's laid out. It just doesn't work. And in the end, that hurts the hero. You know, in wrestling, it's the biggest thing. And in movies, the same thing. You got to have a great villain to have a great hero. Sports the same way. Muhammad Ali was great because he had all these people who he had these incredible trilogy of fights with or rematches with that were amazing. And that made you fall in love with him as a hero. The same thing with these films. If they don't have good villains, so it kind of hurts the hero in your estimation when you look at it overall.
I think it's absolutely huge. In particular, because if you look at the really good ones, Black Panther being the most obvious example.
Oh, yeah.
That is the perfect villain for that character. That is the villain that they have to deal with, you know?
Yes.
Like Captain America and Winter Soldier is the same thing. Like so many of them. And the other thing, if you don't have the great villain, then you have to have the great character journey, which is what's going on in Thor Ragnarok. It's what's going on in No Way Home. And ideally for a great film, you need both the great character journey and the great villain.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And even something like Quantumania, where I would say Jonathan Majors is a damn good actor, even though, you know, all the other stuff off camera set aside, I think he does great as Kang, but the film lets that villain down. And when you're watching at the end of the video, you're like, wait, a bunch of ants beat him. And you're just like, why would you do that? And so those things that kind of just are another example of how bad the villains can be in these middling films.
The whole Kang thing. And I agree. Mm. I think whatever else you want to say about the guy, that guy can act. He's a great actor. And I think Marvel thought that Kang was someone we cared about and thought rather than like someone we have to make you care about.
Yeah.
Like I watched Loki and I met him there and I saw him in other things and how he was popping up, and partially because he's different people every time he pops up. That I just go like, well, and when he showed up in Quantumania as a different version of the same person, I didn't care. I'm not scared of him. He's not, you know, when Heath Ledger shows up as the Joker, I go, oh my God. When this guy shows up, it's like, oh, there's that guy who's a good actor. He's going to do some weird stuff. Again, I bet. I don't know. I wonder how I should feel about this, you know?
I think Majors is an exceptional actor. I think in the end, it still would have fallen apart. I think the Kang stuff would have still fallen apart in the end, regardless of the off-camera stuff, because he's an actor who acts in between the beats.
Yeah.
You saw him at if you see him at the end of Loki, when he is having those conversations with Loki and with Sylvie, the way he is delivering those lines is like someone on the downbeat, and you're just like, I can't catch up with what you're doing, and it doesn't fit the MCU. It just doesn't in the end, so.
Well, and it's also I totally agree with that. And B, it's also the issue with the multiverse of like, we're back in time and forward in time and in the quantum realm. And there's this version of you and this version of you and this version of you is trying to kill this version of you. And if this version of you kills this version of you, then I'll die. But if I save the version of you that's trying to kill the version of me, that's trying to kill the version of you, then maybe something good will happen I was like, I can't track that. I can't get emotionally involved at a certain point. You know what I mean?
And that's when you go,
I'm out.
You go, middling. I'm out of here. Middling. I can't do this. So, exactly. All right. Well, let's say that's our breakdown of all these MCU movies. Let's answer some questions from some of our listeners here, Steve. Some of our fans are joining us live here.
Yeah.
Vulcan Nerd says, what are each of your hottest MCU movie takes? Maybe we've already delivered them, but do you have a hottest MCU movie take?
I think I've said this before, but the big realization I had when I read that MCU or listened to that MCU book in the whole history of MCU, and I don't mean this disrespectfully. The thing I'm going to say, I mean 100% respectfully to the people who did the MCU, which is, it's amazing how lucky they got. Every one of those movies, there were so many moments where they really didn't know what the fuck they were doing. The script was thrown out multiple times on Iron Man. They're always behind the eight ball. They're frequently scrambling. Things they think are going to work don't end up working. Disasters happen at the last moment. I think George Lucas with Star Wars got incredibly lucky. That movie was inches away from being a total shit show. It was a brilliant guy, did some brilliant stuff, did not brilliant stuff, and with great editing and fantastic music and fantastic, the special effects of that movie are way behind. There's no way they could get them done on time, and yet they did. That's much what happened with the MCU, is that there were so many moments where it could have been a fucking disaster, and at the last possible moment, something flipped the right way, someone had a brilliant idea, they did something differently, and suddenly it was all working. And that happened over and over again. And the difference now, I think, is they're not getting lucky anymore. The fans are not smiling on them. And so, because they would just rush out to try to do stuff and it ended up working, but it doesn't always work that way. That's my hot take. What about you?
My hot take is this: Kevin Feige gets way too much credit and not enough blame for the success of the MCU and the failure of some of the films of the MCU. I think directors take way too much shit when their movies don't work in the MCU, and Feige hides when that happens. Instead of coming out front saying, we made some mistakes, Chloe Zhao is an excellent director, we clearly overthought this thing, and my people in my writer's rooms or my executives, they messed up in making some of these decisions. This is not on her, this is on us, and we're going to do better. Feige never says that. He always says it in the broadest of terms, never taking personal responsibility. So, for me, that's my hottest take, is that I think Kevin has a bit of arrogance to him that I think James Gunn is more upfront about, which I kind of weirdly respect, whereas Kevin just kind of sits in the background and lets other people take the slings and arrows while he keeps going. And so, although I do think that's changing a little bit, Steve, I do think people think if Doomsday doesn't work, this is on Feige, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I think it is. No, I think it's going to be done if Doomsday doesn't work. The size of that budget and how much they're investing into it. That thing's, well, the thing is, this is what so bugs me about the way the budgets and box office works, is the only way for Doomsday to be a success is if it is essentially in the top three most successful movies of all time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's what they're really shooting for. It needs to be not just $1 billion movie. It needs to be a $1.5 to $2 billion movie, I'd assume, with the money.
I would say two. Yeah. I would say two. Considering they're spending $500 million on it, it has to be two. I have to be consistent. I think Avatar Fire and Ash made $1.5 billion and it underperformed on a budget of $400 million. So if you've got a budget of $500 million and you don't make two, you are underperforming in the Marvel universe.
That's why I never make $500 million movies. It seems like a bad investment.
No thanks. No thanks. Sean Brennan says, I think Shang-Chi is the most underrated MCU movie. I love the story and characters, and it has some of the best choreography in the MCU. Steve, I think you and I might agree. It could be a fun short to talk about the most underrated MCU movie. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think, well, it's not that, I'm not sure if I'd say it's the most underrated. It's the one where I really wanted to get back to that world, and they didn't let me. You know?
Yeah. Sorry, man's got to
hydrate.
Sterling Jones 1187 says, looking at the MCU, what character or characters do you think were a swing and a miss or misused and could use better fleshing out? Well, I already said the Rachel McAdams, her role in Doctor Strange, I think should have been fleshed out a little bit more. Bit of a swing and a miss, I think, even when she shows up in Multiverse of Madness. I think you could, maybe Namor. I'm not even joking. Maybe Namor.
I agree.
Yeah.
Is anyone talking about Namor right now? Like, I think this is a great character that was well cast. The designs are good. And because the thing about Namor, what's so great about that character is it's kind of like Magneto, where it's someone you can genuinely like and be heroic, and you can really be with them and then be not with them. That's a great character, but I don't think I agree. I don't think they serviced him well. I think the three heroes in the Marvels, you know, I like them a lot, and that was the swing and the miss for me.
I would throw out the entire cast of Eternals was a swing and a miss, bro. Like, none of those characters got the due diligence they deserved.
Well, I never read any of those comics, so I don't really know those characters. So I don't know what they should have been. I feel like there were some other ones that were introduced, but it's not my strong suit of remembering back and coming up with lists. So so nothing's popping in my brain at the moment.
Thank you, Sterling. Wiley with the last one here. Watching the Coachella streams, I'll watch after. But John, I watched the Elvis doc. It was so good. Lost my mind seeing him sing Beatles songs. So good. Yeah, Wiley's referencing the epic film that came out, Elvis Presley in Concert, that came out a couple of months ago. It is now out on digital. Highly recommend it if anybody hasn't seen it. Even if you've seen every Elvis Presley behind-the-scenes doc, this one will still be one of your favorites, because it's a whole reappreciation of 1970s Elvis, Vegas Elvis. You really see all the work he put into doing those shows, and the idea that he was pushed out this narrative that it was Fat Elvis years gets really shot to pieces when you watch this and see how much work he put into the shows. It's amazing. So
it's on my list. I want to watch it. I'm in the middle of the Counting Crows documentary right now.
Oh, that is great. I love that documentary.
Well, and I knew Adam because my good friend Soren, Adam lived with Soren when I was hanging out. So I knew Adam right when they became the Counting Crows. And right.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's what's really weird. Soren's not in the movie, but so many places there are pictures of like, yep, that's the house that I used to hang out in. And yes, I've been to that bar. And yes, I was there. So the first 30 minutes that's kind of Berkeley oriented, you know, it's really trippy to watch and very emotional. I knew some of the stuff that was going on with Adam, but there was a lot going on with him.
I know. I didn't know any of that stuff, right? And so watching that doc, and I defend my love of Counting Crows, August and everything after, right? That's one of the greatest albums of the last 40 years. I don't care what anyone says.
It's great. Also, by the way, Adam Duritz, huge Cal fan.
Well, there you go.
He would be down on the sidelines with the teams during games, and I would spot that hair and go, there he is.
I love it. All right, Steve, we're at the hour and a half mark. Anything else you want to say as we wrap? Oh, wait, we should say we are going. We are doing Deadpool right now, currently. And Steve mentioned, although it's not officially Deadpool, a part of the MCU when it came out, where would we put Deadpool in our listings of great, good, middling, or ugly? So, Steve,
well, John, it's so hard. I mean, we talked about so many. Great. I love Deadpool. It goes in the great movie category, hands down. No question about it. I love it.
Yeah, damn it. I'd have to say it's a great film. Rewatching it now for what we're doing, and it was so fun to revisit it and have these conversations. So, yes, 100%. It's in the great category. It's so good.
It is a totally unique vision. It is exactly what I've been saying. Deadpool, Guardians isn't like anything. Black Panther isn't like anything. Deadpool is not like anything. It is what it is.
Yeah, 100% agree. 100% agree. But what else have we got coming up, Steve, as we wrap up? Please let people know and where they can find you and all of that.
Well, they can certainly find me at SR Morris on Twitter, and they can support the show at patreon.com/thecinephiles, as well as on Apple Podcasts, where they can get ad-free versions of the show. Listen to our Cinephile shorts. Our most recent short that we just put out was on mentors, senseis, and teachers. We talked about how those characters like Yoda and Mickey and Mr. Miyagi appear in film. We have shorts every week to check out. And right now, as you said, we've got Deadpool. Part one is going to be out this coming Friday, with part two the week after. And of course, subscribe to the show everywhere you can.
Absolutely. Please do that. As for me, you can follow me at The Roca Says, as you see down below there, and my YouTube channel, youtube.com/JohnRocaSays. For those of you who are going to be following the CinemaCon stuff, I will do my damnedest to go live every day to talk about what I saw on that day's panels. Tomorrow, or Monday's only one, Tuesday's two, and then I think Wednesday's three panels, and then Thursday two panels. So I'll be fucking busy. So if you want to get my live reactions to all this stuff, head on over to my YouTube channel as well. But yes, Deadpool 1 coming out on Friday from Steve and I. We already recorded part one. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. We had a blast talking about it. All right. So for my partner, Steve. Oh, yeah. And if you watch it, please let us know your thoughts. Where do you put good, the bad, the middling, the ugly, and the great films? Where do you have those in your categories? Let us know down in the comment section. All right. For my partner, Steve Morris, I am John Roca. We'll talk to you next time with another brand new Cinephiles live show here on the Cinephiles YouTube channel. Take care. Until then.